We have some case studies on the blog. For example, Alibaba Cloud, we did one even for the CNCF blog. But I never thought I would say this about myself, but I'm really one of the PMs for this project. And I don't mean this badly to a PM, but I never saw myself as a PM. But that's just all I do, reach out to people. Hey, cool stuff. Can we do something together? Because that really helps people convince that the project is used. People rely on them. Certainly if you see big names, if they use it, then we probably should use it as well. It must be good, right? And that really helps. In terms of the CNCF incubation, luckily there, end users can talk off the record. So we have some of the people with the big companies that we cannot list that are part of it. Still, you want to talk to your friends and colleagues about ones. And obviously, there are still ones that we do not know about because it's free and open source.
Hello and welcome to Committing to Cloud Native, the podcast where we talk about the confluence of cloud native and open source. Super excited to talk about our guests today and to talk with them even, because that's what we do here on the Committing to Cloud Native podcast. Besides me, Richard Litauer, we also have Justin Dorfman as a panelist. Justin, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. Happy to be here. Happy to be here talking with two guests today. One of them is calling from my favorite city in the Czech Republic, from Brno. And we have Zbinek Rubalik, which I probably totally butchered his name, for which I apologize sincerely. I do not speak Czech. I am so sorry. We also have Tom Kerkove. Zbinek is joining us today as a senior software engineer from Red Hat, whereas Tom is joining us as the Azure architect at Codit. Both of them together are maintainers for KEDA, K-E-D-A, capital letters, please. What is KEDA? Which one of you wants to go first?
Well, I can get started. It's basically aiming to make application auto-scaling that simple on Kubernetes, because it isn't. So we try to make it super simple for you so you can focus on your application and not the scaling internals of Kubernetes.
I thought Kubernetes was natively made to scale. Isn't that the entire point of like Kubernetes? It's made to help make it easier for you to do that?
Definitely. If you went through the whole internals and the guts of Kubernetes and you understand how to get your external metrics inside the cluster and all these kind of things. Like if you just want to scale CPU and memory, fine, you're good to go. But as soon as you want to get it from, let's say, Prometheus or some cloud provider, you need to do some more work. And we try to give you a consistent approach to do it for all your applications, be it with cloud vendor, be it with some open source technology. We give you a consistent experience.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense. How long has this project been around?
The Ruby was created in 2019, so I just kind of go by that.
Yeah, I would say it's like something around it.
And how large is the open source community? How many developers do you have working there? How many maintainers?
We have four maintainers. So two people from Microsoft and then us two. And I think, how many contributors do we have? Good question.
It's more than 100.
Nice.
It originally got announced in May 2019, indeed. So as a partnership between Microsoft and Red Hat to close the gap and give an event-driven autoscaler. And then early last year, so that's 2020, we donated it to the CNCF as a sandbox project to basically stimulate the vendor neutralness. And then actually now we are working on our proposal for incubation and we're actively doing end user interviews. So it is a great time to have this conversation because we're also learning from people how we are helping them make that autoscaling simpler.
That's awesome. I mean, the reason I reached out is because a little ahead of us in the program, we just joined as a sandbox and I noticed that you're getting ready to go to incubation. Were you there from the beginning of the sandbox onboarding or did you come after?
I jumped in around sandbox. I think Zbinek, you're part of KEDA from the start.
I joined a couple of months later, so maybe like 4 months later in the summer of 2019.
So it's mainly presenting what the project is, how it helps people, and why it should be part of the CNCF. We came at a moment where they were just changing the whole process, so it was a bit finding out what the new approach is, but I think it was fairly straightforward to get it done. And it also helps you think about how you run the project helps you think about security, being a good member of the community. And all now with incubation, more about what's the adoption, what's the community, who are the end users. Funnily enough, that's a very hard piece of maintaining open source, knowing who's using it, because you cannot measure it in any way. So you really need to reach out to people. I noticed you use it. Can we list you as an end user? And I was actually very surprised how many times you hear, okay, I need to check with legal if we can do it, this and that. And
right. Yeah.
That's a bit so true. Outside because you're using free stuff. So for me, it seems obvious to just give back the logo, let's say. But of course, yeah, a logo has...
No, they're strict. We had eBay's logo up on our site and they're like, we didn't say you could use that. We're like, oh, okay, our bad. We'll take it down. Like, it wasn't a big deal, but it was just, they track it down and they're like, oh, we can't have that on the site.
Yeah, like we have some really super cool end users. We already have some listed publicly, but we have some other great ones, but we cannot talk about them. But man, they're so cool that it's really annoying because people use it from day to day. And
okay. Yeah. And the most annoying thing is that in order to go to incubation from the sandbox, is you have to have user studies. And, you know, if we can't write them because they won't let us, it's like this kind of catch 22. So I totally feel you. I mean, you've got some really big brand names. You got Microsoft, Alibaba, Cloud, and a few others. But are they doing the case studies? How do you go about doing that?
We have some case studies on the blog that we have. For example, Alibaba Cloud, we did one even for the CNCF blog. But I never thought I would say this about myself, but I'm really one of the PMs for this project. And I don't mean this badly to a PM, but I never saw myself as a PM. But that's just all I do, reach out to people. Hey, cool stuff. Can we do something together? Because that really helps people convince that the project is used. People rely on them. Certainly, if you see big names, if they use it, then we probably should use it as well. It must be good, right? And that really helps. In terms of the CNCF incubation, luckily there, end users can talk off the record. So we have some of the people with the big companies that we cannot list that are part of it. So that helps.
Right.
Still, you want to talk to your friends and colleagues about ones. And obviously, there are still ones that we do not know about because it's free and open source.
We recently had a guest on Avi Press, who co-founded and CEO of Scarf. .sh. Check that out. Him and his team are figuring out the problem to see who's using your stuff. It's pretty cool. We're going to implement it pretty soon. So this is cool. Like we can share, you know, tips and stuff. I like that.
Also, go SH ahead. Sites, Keda is those of you who want to go to the URL. Tom, I have a question for you. So you've been working for Codit as an Azure architect for a while, but you're also, speaking of big names, you have a lot of like, you know, medallions to attach to yours. So you've been a Microsoft Azure MVP and advisor since 2014. You're one of the first GitHub stars. You've been a CNCF ambassador since 2020. And you do a lot of different stuff around GitHub. It's like Promotor, Kubernetes Event Grid Bridge, Azure Deprecation, Arcus. I'm literally just reading your bio, but partially because the people in the audience haven't read your bio and it's my job to make sure they know who they're listening to. So one of the questions I have for you is why this project out of other projects? What's so cool about Keda compared to anything else in the cloud native space?
Honestly, I had a customer who went from an Azure service to Kubernetes when they said, we'll use Kubernetes. I think that was 4 or 5 years ago. It's great. It's containers and it really scales very well. And then they deployed it and they said, okay, let's auto scale. And then I was like, this is not supported out of the box. Good luck. And back then there were only two metric adapters, which was Prometheus. And I think GCP, and I was like, okay, guys, you can build it yourself or you'll manually scale. They said, we'll manually scale. But that's how I started Prometer to bring Azure Monitor Metrics and Prometheus. Fast forward to the partnership with Red Hat and Microsoft. I was like, man, this is what my customer needed. This is just closing such a big gap. And actually, I was already working with Jeff Holland before as an MVP. So I reached out and say, hey, how can I help? Because this impacts all my customers. And yeah, I really believed in the project. I started contributing. And then the team asked if I wanted to become a maintainer. So that's the story. It's just what I needed, basically.
Awesome. Zvinek, what about you?
Oh, it was like a little bit different because, as Tom mentioned, the project originally started as a cooperation between Microsoft and Red Hat. So there was the guy from Red Hat that told me, okay, we are working on this project and we are looking for some additional workforce. So I was looking at it and it was like, this is cool because this brings something new to Kubernetes, something that's missing because, you know, auto-scaling is not simple as Tom mentioned. So that's why I joined this project because I like the idea.
So you two are maintainers, but maintainers is a term which covers all manner of sins. What do you say that your jobs are on a day-to-day basis? Are you merging issues? Are you doing big strategy planning? Are you community facilitators? What sort of stuff would you say you do?
I would say that we are doing everything that you mentioned. So basically, it starts with the communication on GitHub issues, GitHub discussions on Slack. We have like a Slack channel on Kubernetes space. So it's like GitHub. And we are like making decisions about like features that we would like to have, would like to implement and all the stuff. And it's complex. So you can try different aspects of project development. So as Tom mentioned, he slowly transferred into PM because he needs to do all this kind of stuff, but he's doing really great. So that's perfect.
No, that's how I know of Tom is Twitter. And you guys, especially, you are like besties on Twitter. Like it's just constant quote retweets and hearts, and it's really cute. But I just want to go into something. And the other thing with the CNCF is obviously building the community. And that's something that I'm y'all where it's like I have multiple hats. The biggest thing is creating the community. And I saw you have merch in your store. Like, how are you fulfilling that? Do you use a service or what do you do?
So that's a good example of the benefits of CNCF, where they have a service desk. And I don't know how it originally arose, but we thought, yeah, why don't we have merch? So he started digging and there's a lot of options. There's like these websites where you can upload your logo and then people can buy merchandising and they just pay for everything, I think. But I just said, hey, let's go to the CNCF service desk and see what their guidance is, because we cannot be the only ones with this request. And then they told me that CNCF projects, which are part of graduation or incubation, get this for free. So they become part of the CNCF store. So I said, hey, no problem. I fully respect that. Do you have any recommendations? And then they just ask, okay, what's the quantity? We said, yeah, we just want to do a limited amount. And then they said, okay, let's just do it for you. So they picked it up for us. So that's a good example of how a foundation helps. Yeah. Also, in terms of the website, I think it was with the 1.0 release, I created the first ugly version just to have something up. And then we involved CNCF as well. And they had a person come up with the current design and built it for us. So they really help with these typical non-project specific things, which save us a lot of time.
The docs are beautiful. They just flow really well. They're really well done. I was pretty impressed with that. So it's interesting. You. So you're a sandbox project, but you're kind of getting incubator / graduation perks. Am I going to have to talk to Chris Anishek about this? What's going on? I'm just joking.
I always say one can only ask. If it's a no, it's a no.
That's true.
Yes, it's even better.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And that's a good lesson for everyone is just all they can do is say no. There's really nothing to lose. Interesting. Okay, that's good to know. So you don't have to do any of the fulfillment. They handle everything.
Yes.
The Shopify store, I believe, is what you use.
Yeah, I think so. But they did everything for us indeed. But there are actually a lot of ways where you can offer this. So I was actually a bit overwhelmed and I wanted to use what is typically used. So we got involved.
We use RealThread. They do a really great job. We could provide them like a Google form and people fill it out and they put T-shirt, stickers, anything you want to put in there, and they ship it anywhere in the world. So they've been a really great partner. And we just basically get our stickers from Sticker Mule, ship them to RealThread, and then they just handle everything. It's a really great service.
Justin used to work at Sticker Mule. So, you know, just take whatever he says with a grain of salt. Okay.
I think Sticker Mule makes the best stickers. I really do. But what do I know?
But you still need money to be able to make stickers.
Yeah, no,
we don't have any funding. So, well, at least to my knowledge, So we really rely on the good people such as Snyk, Azure DevOps, GitHub. I don't know, Zbnik, what else do we have that's free?
It's Vexhost for hosting our OpenStack environment for testing.
Well, are you allowed to like do GitHub sponsors, or does the CNCF prohibit that?
That's actually a good question.
Because like if you did like a GitHub sponsors, you could put it into an open collective and then get like a virtual card and then pay for stickers out of that, or just pay for them yourself and then get a reimbursement.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know if we're allowed to.
Yeah. Gotta have stickers, or it's not an open source project in my mind.
So you two are paid. You have money coming in. You're not doing this of your own initiative. It looks like you're in nice apartments. So I'm just making sure. I mean, not too nice, but nice.
I do this in my spare time. So that's also why I'm super slow and delaying everything. So my company gives me some budget to, as an MVP, to do whatever I want. So that helps. But the majority is while my kid is sleeping or when my wife is out for work.
I'm getting paid, so I'm good.
How many times has Microsoft tried to recruit you, Tom? It seems like you are one of their biggest advocates.
No, none.
Interesting.
Well, Justin's trying to get a referral fee there. Again, sneaky guy. You got to watch that dude. You got to watch him. So funding aside, CNCF has given you a lot of opportunities. And obviously, you know, your companies allow you to do work on this stuff. That's great. It seems like a sustainable project. You have awesome docs. You have tons of contributors. What are the major challenges that you're facing? Like, what are like the top two or three things that come to mind where it's like, oh, this is the problem that I have and I don't know how to solve it?
Commit and run.
So
we allow you to contribute scalars. And then while it's super simple to add them, it's also, I think, a downside because we have scalars to systems that we're not experienced with. I'm looking to see if I have an example.
So on your homepage, you have this huge list of projects. Those are the scalars you're talking about, right?
Yeah. So we rely on a community. For example, we have one for Huawei Cloud. If there are issues, I mean, never used that before. So that's why Zbnik now said, okay, every new scaler needs to have those end-to-end tests. If they're not there, sorry, we will not be able to merge them because we have no idea how it should work.
You must be this tested to ride the ride, is what you're saying. It's great.
I think that would be my remark.
Zbnik? Yeah, I agree. This is the biggest like issue we have because, you know, as you can see, the variety of scalers is quite huge, and it is not in one person's or some two persons like strange to do all this kind of stuff. So we need to keep the people engaged that are using the specific scalar. So usually the workflow is that there is somebody that, okay, I would like to have this scalar for KDA. What can we do? So we encourage them to contribute this kind of scalar, and we would really appreciate if this person can take a look at the issues and from time to time, you know, check if everything is okay.
I wonder if maybe a document policy talking about scalar maintenance and what's required of you if you become someone who submits a scalar might be a good idea. Because then you can say, if you aren't reactive to issues, we'll remove the scalar from production because it's clearly going to, you know.
If I'm not mistaken, we have this kind of thing specified in the documentation somewhere. So once the scalar is not being maintained, we can remove it from the core. So that's fine.
How many users would you say you have?
It's open source. We have no idea.
No idea at all. Okay. But tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people using it. No idea. Super cool.
We only know about the people that are listed, at least from what I know. I don't know about you, Zbnik, but that's why becoming a maintainer makes you see these kind of things. But that's why if you use an open source project, it's the least you can do.
I know that Jeff mentioned the number of installations of KDA on Azure Kubernetes, but I'm not sure if I'm allowed to talk about this number, but the percentage of Intel installation was pretty impressive, I would say, for this kind of small project.
What's interesting about like Huawei Cloud, because I don't know, I hadn't heard of Huawei Cloud before. I presume I will hear from it again, but I have no idea what Huawei's user base would be. I don't speak Chinese. I can't read Chinese documentation, and I don't know a lot of Chinese developers. And so I was like, it could be freaking massive. And maybe there really is just one person keeping all that up and you wouldn't know. Super tough problem.
Yeah. And for example, the Alibaba Cloud, they are using it for like scaling the applications that are being deployed on the cloud. So I would say that this cloud is pretty huge, like in China. So there could be like a massive number of customers that are being like customers of Alibaba. So this is just one customer for us.
We had William Morgan from Linkerd on, and one thing that he does is he has an adopters.md. I don't know if you have that, but he basically just goes out and anyone he finds out that is using the project, it's not about so much the logo on the site, but the easy way to, for someone who's using it, can do a pull request and then add their company. And that's kind of something he's very obsessive about. So.
Yeah, I think that's another good approach, but I'm just thinking, what's the difference? Of course, it's still a logo, but I think we would still have the bigger company saying, it's not okay that you list us. I think it will be easier, of course, but I think the way this needs to be fixed is not on our project. But for example, if you have a look at GitHub, you have a star. Stars is nothing. I mean, this is just... Right. Let's bookmark this repo. But what if there would be something new, like a button, I use this project, and then you as an individual could just click that button, or as an organization, I could click it, and then you at least have a better measurement.
There's no way that's not coming. There's no way that Microsoft doesn't know that's something that should be implemented for GitHub. I mean, that's been obvious for years. So
I've suggested it, but let's say that it's not getting much traction.
Well, maybe we have the power, Richard, to make this happen because we know some people at
we have power. I'm okay with that. We can figure it out. I'm wondering if it's possible. I used to have the New York Times logo on my personal website because I was referencing a random like throwaway article about Dothraki, the language of the movie Game of Thrones. And then New York Times emailed me saying, you're using our logo on your website in a way to advertise you or to increase your clout. That'll cost you $3,000 a month or something. And I'm like, thanks. So it was something large. I don't even remember. I just took it down. And I like my commit on GitHub was like, these guys are jerks. But I realize now what I could have done is made a section of the website saying I can either confirm or deny that these people have let me use their logo or not.
Like that.
But how do they know so quickly that the
audience? Oh, no, they didn't know very quickly. It took them years to find out. But they basically have armies of minions who go out and just try to make money. I mean, that person's making his pay grade. And, you know, I could have been nicer. I wasn't, but that's cool. But, like, that's just someone's job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have, like, the same type of job of someone giving out court orders to people. Or
it's like a patent troll almost, you know?
Yeah.
Just numbers.
Yeah, stupid. It's like, you a-hole.
Regarding the patent trolls, this is the one thing I like about Red Hat, if I can say this thing, that basically anything that's patentable, like, which is what is reasonable, and is being like developed by some engineer at Red Hat, he can file for the patent, and he gets like some reward from the company, but the company will take over the patent and we'll put it outside for everyone to use. So basically, this is the defense against the patent law. So you can work on the patents, you can get paid. Your name is still on the patent, but the company owns it. That there is like declaration that it will be like free forever, basically.
I'm not sure how would IBM feel about that? Because that is the parent company of Red Hat.
Well, we are still different companies. So they are just owning the shares. So
yep.
So basically, we have different policies, and this is still valid. And I know that in the agreement, when IBM was buying Red Hat, there was like this note that the patents will like remain like freely available for everyone. So
keeping the open source
promise, this is good.
Yeah,
Speaking of different perspectives, this is a question I haven't asked a lot, but you two seem super personable. And it's an interesting podcast just with maintainers, which we often don't have. Sometimes we have people who are more like sales reps or advocates or evangelists, my least favorite word in the world. What are your personal goals for being with this project? Where do you want to be in 5 years? How is Keta helping you get there? Specifically in relation to cloud native, not like I want a house somewhere in, you know, the mountains of Poland, but like specifically like, what is Keta helping you do? What? There's a couple. They're small hills. They're not very big. Okay, I'm sorry.
Sorry about that.
The mountains of Bruges, Tom, where you live. I'm just curious, like, how is Keta helping you become a better cloud native engineer?
By not having to worry about how Kubernetes scales. I bluntly said this when we were presenting Keta for the incubation graduation. I want this to be the standard application autoscaler, so that everybody uses the same thing. They don't have to worry about it. And we just handle everything for you, frankly.
Nice.
I would say the same. I like the simplicity because I like viewing things on from the user perspective, because usually we are developers, engineers, and we are focusing just on the code, technical side. But the UX side very often, to be honest. So I do like that it should be as simple as possible, even for people who don't know Kubernetes, don't know containers that much, and don't know all the internals. They just have application in a container, in an image, and they just want to scale it. So this is the end goal, I would say. It should be very simple.
Yeah, I fully agree. And then I typically hear a lot of people say, hey, but you don't need this because you could do it this way or that way. And I'm like, that's fine, but you understand Kubernetes. You're highly involved in the community, so you know all the project. But imagine you're a person who's new to cloud native and he's responsible to deploy his application. Why should he spend days, and now I'm sometimes exaggerating, but days to understand how to just scale this freaking thing while it's just a Helm install away and you're good to go. And that's one less thing to worry about. Because there is already so many things in Kubernetes you have to worry about.
Yeah, about Kubernetes value for scaling the things. So there is like this component which is called Horizontal Pod Autoscaler, which allows you to scale your application, but just based on the CPU and memory. But there is one big difference, because this component doesn't allow you to scale to zero, and KDAP can scale to zero. So can scale your application down to zero. The HPA can just scale to one replica. So this is the big difference, I would say, from a technical perspective.
Yeah, and that's also a good example, because we're working on a new reference case with cast.ai, and they basically use KDAP to make Kubernetes cost efficient and make sure that we don't waste electricity and all this kind of stuff, and make the environment a better place just by optimizing your workloads. And that's a nice reference case, because that way we're also helping the environment. So
Elon Musk would love that. And as you said, it would just be a great mark angle, like, a good thing. You're not flexing. You're just saying, hey, look, we're saving energy. Not only are you saving money, but you're saving the planet.
Exactly.
For the other listeners who may not know, Justin and I are both panelists on another podcast called Sustain. We're literally talking about sustainability of open source. And every now and then it goes away from maintainers stopping burning out to sustaining the environment. What I love about this podcast is that it basically could go on either one of Justin's and I podcasts. It's basically the same. Yeah. It's like how to sustain maintainers and the environment. Super cool. It makes me really happy.
Yeah, it's like a parallel universe in a way.
Crossover.
Woo. Yeah, crossover. What is this, a crossover episode? Anyone who watches BoJack Horseman would understand that.
So, Tom, I'm looking at your website right now. For listeners, this is blog.tomkerkhove, that's KERKHOVE.BE. And it seems like you're a prolific writer. What blog posts do you have down the line? What are you most excited about telling people? If people could only read one blog post, what would it be? Again, really open-ended question, because mostly I just love hearing your responses.
Would be one that's on my to-do for almost 1 to 2 years, which is about my adventures of doing open source as a maintainer.
Yes. But could you talk a bit about what's on that?
First, I need to have some time to write it. It's basically going to talk about what I learned from being on the other side of the fence.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest lessons to me was, instead of writing a gibberish issue with a vague bug report, really take the time, because it will also help you get the bug fixed faster. But instead of opening a bug, sometimes it's just as simple as opening a pull request. And that's why for my projects, I always use the mantra, which is, it's just a pull request away. So that's why documentation, automation, code, whatever has to be in the Git repo. So you can just send a pull request. And that's why CI/CD and all of those things, which is now all in YAML, is such a great help, because you do not rely on a human making a manual change before the CI succeeds, for example. But yeah, I need to write about that first.
No, thank you for sharing. That's awesome. I can't emphasize enough how important it is for people to know that in writing in open source isn't about your intent, and it's not just about just showing up and coding, but it's about actually thinking about how to be effective and how to be effective at being a nice person. Right.
Oh, yes. There's so many things you need to do, which is not code. It's ridiculous. Even if it's replying to issues and discussions.
Yeah. And those people should sometimes bear in mind that basically we are spread across the globe. So there are different time zones, you know, different days of week. So this is another aspect of being a maintainer, like to respond to all these people, or at least try to respond to them, I would say.
Richard's working on a code of conduct issue on a project that we work on.
No, it's fine. It's so draining, man. It's just so,
The thing. It comes with the territory. Like, as you said, Tom, it's not just about the code. It's about all those other pieces that really make the project. And if you want to be going from the sandbox to graduation, those are the things you're going to have to deal with. So anyone listening to this who are thinking about bringing their project to the cloud native, to the CNCF, these are things you have to think about. It's not just writing the best code. It's how do you manage everything in between?
I haven't written a single letter of code for CADA. I'm doing all the other things.
Yeah.
Nice.
I think that's important.
It's not nice, but...
Well, yeah. But that's just so great to admit. Like, that's exactly what maintainers do, is not write code. You know, it sucks.
Yeah. The only code I write on the main CuriFence project is the MDs, you know, the markdown files, updating the readmes and getting the release notes together. And that's fine because that's what I'm good at. I'm good at doing the other things that are not code related. So building a community from scratch, very difficult. But talking to you and everyone else that also has CNCF projects, it makes it a lot easier. So thank you both.
I would like to say that this is super important, like not just, you know, doing the code, as Tom mentioned, but all the stuff around it is very important to have like active project and healthy, because if you don't have the healthy environment around, the project will stail, basically.
Yeah. I fully agree. And one of the typical things that I see is you go to a project and you look for documentation. If you're lucky, you find documentation, then you ask, okay, do you have any documentation? Yes, it's the code. And I'm like, man, I'm not going to go through the code to understand how to use it. It should be documented. And otherwise, I'm out. I mean, I'm here to use your free stuff, man. I don't want to waste my time.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. But you really need to think from an end user perspective. Otherwise, you will not build a good product, in my opinion.
Exactly.
That's why I really like what Nick was saying earlier about UX, right? UX is, or the DX as they're sometimes calling it, the developer experience, super important work.
Let's say you would like to try some new project and then you open documentations, do hard and it fails, and then you don't know what to do because the documentation, you know, is not very good. So yeah, this is something that is very important for any project, I would say, any project. Not even like software projects, but all the projects around the world.
Every listener who has had this experience, if you're not driving, raise your hands. Yes, that's right. That was all of us. Cool. Thank you so much. That was really awesome to get your insight into being a maintainer for CADA, into being a maintainer in general, into being good people. Where can people follow you both on the web? Zabinek, where can the people follow you?
I have a Twitter account, which is ZROBALELEK, which is pretty hard. So you can find it somewhere. I would say, and yeah, this is the main point for reaching out to me.
Awesome. Tom?
If you like drinking from a fire hose, you can follow me on Twitter and otherwise on Discord. Links cool. In the show notes.
Exactly.
Before we close out, I want to do maybe this is like a new segment, but basically, who would you like to thank at the CNCF or anyone in the cloud native community? I think that's important because then people can follow them and make sure that they're getting more points of view. So Tom, who would you like to thank?
I would say Liz Rice, because she's helping us with the incubation. She's really nice to work with, but also Chris, Chris, the CTO of CNCF.
Anishek.
Yeah, exactly. Although he's super busy, he's always supporting us. Definitely the fact that he's helping CADA from the early days when we were so small project and he believed in us from the start is really, really nice, certainly given he's that busy. And he's also the one that said to me, guys, why are you not incubation yet? You need to start moving. Mm. So that's a true sign that he believes in what we're doing. So yeah. I think he's a really nice person.
Yeah, well said, Tom. I agree.
you're for Chris A as well. Yeah, I agree. He's always on the service desk. I'm like, how do you find time to do that?
I don't know if he ever sleeps.
I don't think so.
Well, Tom, if you say it's scrolled, I'm not sure because you don't sleep as well, right? Because you are doing all this stuff. And
Robot conspiracy.
Maybe. Or it's just about priorities.
Awesome. Thank you both so much. It was great having you on. Let us know in the future if we can help out at all. Listeners, if you're curious about them, you can follow them in the show notes. If you have any comments about this episode, please send me or Justin a line. It's justin@curiefence.com. That's jdorfman@curiefence.io. That's jdorfman@curiefence.io. Send along anything. And again, Tom, Zabinek, merci, or vielen dank, whichever you are, if you're in Brussels. And Jokoya, Zabinek, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.